The sefer feels cozy. Okay, we're continuing in the Shari Teshuva. We are in Sif Mem. We're on the 14th principle on page 54 and 55 in the Feldheim text. Ha'ikar, okay, 54 and 55. Ha'ikar ha'arba asar. The 14th principle is havidui, is confession. Shenemar, as it says in the Torah, v'hisvado asher chata aleho. And the person will confess for the sin that he did, upon which he has done wrong. Okay, it's pretty straightforward. V'yeshalav lahaskir avonasov, and when he makes this vidui, he should mention his sins. Vavonos avosav, and also the sins of his ancestors. Why? Ki haya nenosh aleihem ba'achso maseh avosav biyado. Because he will get punished if he continues to do and hang on to the actions of his ancestors. He'll be punished for what they have done. V'chein kasuv, and so it is written, v'hisvadu es avonam v'es avon avosam. And they will confess their sins and the sins of their fathers. Okay, that's all. Very, very short principle over here. And the Rambam says it straight out, that they're the same thing. And he says anyone who verbalizes his confession without resolving in his heart to abandon the Avera, this is the example that Rabbeinu Yonah gave earlier, is compared to a person who goes into the mikvah while he's holding on to a lizard. And it doesn't work until he casts away the lizard. Okay. Everyone's in agreement, and this is really one of the last parts of the tshuva process, is to basically say, I've done everything I'm supposed to do, I'm confessing everything I've done, and he wants to get rid of the Avera. So the question is, Rabbeinu Yonah says a person will be punished for the sins of his ancestors. Why should a person be punished for the sins of his ancestors as well, number one? And number two, a more fundamental question is, what is this entire purpose of confession? Don't I and Hashem already know that I've done wrong? So the answer to this is that vidui, confession, deals in a very clear way with a physical process of expelling out an avera. And this is far different than the Christian approach to confession. And let's explain this. Reb Chaim of Volozhin and others say that Judaism views the personality of a Jew as being inherently good. Inherently good. First man before the sin, he had a natural tendency and leanings only to do good and what Hashem wanted him to do. He obviously had a bechira, had a free will choice to do what was wrong, but the desire to do something wrong was not an internal need or a desire, but rather was an external possibility. You know, there existed an option to do this aver, but I really don't identify myself. First man did not identify himself that feeling as an internal need. You know, as opposed to, you know, I have a need to do something that is against Hashem's will. That was not Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon's most internal need and desire was to do what was right. That's the way he was built. First man knew that to do what was right was synonymous with to do what Hashem wanted him to do. It was clear. But external to him, there was this possibility. You could do this. You could do something else, which is not right. But, you know, he didn't have a need to want to do that. He didn't have a need to want to do that. That was before he sinned. After the sin, the Zohar and others talk about what happened, and they talk about a concept of ta'arov bo tovara, that they're now got mixed into him, good and evil. Man became a mixture of that, which means in the same way that man possessed an internal desire for what was good, he now, after the sin, possessed also to a certain degree an internal desire for negative behavior, and it became internalized by that avera, by that activity. Now the possibility, not just the possibility external, but inside himself felt that he might want to do, he would have feelings, you know, I'd like to do this avera too, it's something I would like to do. The question is, but I can't do it because Hashem told me not to do it. That was a change. Man developed an internal desire to do things that were not proper. Now, this concept of that which was external became something that was internal. This is now something that's part of our lives as well. Now, it works on two levels. There are certain tendencies that we are born with, both positive and both negative. That's one thing. And also there's certain forces that are not inherently part of us, and they become part of us because we schlep them into our lives. We may at first not have no appetite, no taste for these types of activities, but we move ourselves closer to them and try to accustom ourselves to them to the point where they do become internalized. Okay, and that's the two things that happen. So, in other words, either you have a natural tendency to, let's say, that your midah is too much in one area. So you have a natural tendency to be lazy, a natural tendency to be angry. That's the temperament you're born with. But then you can cultivate certain temperaments, by doing things you shouldn't do. Person never had a real taiva to look at things he shouldn't look at, and then somehow he starts going on the internet and starts seeing things and starts cultivating and developing that taiva, and the taiva becomes a strong taiva. And that's something you invited into your life. It wasn't part of you. So when the day of judgment comes, obviously which one will Hashem hold us more responsible for? Hashem won't hold us as responsible for those tendencies that we were born with, as much as the tendencies that we instilled within ourselves afterwards by entertaining these things that we didn't have a taste for beforehand. This is the concept of tarovas tovara, this idea of this combination of good and evil residing inside the person. So Rav Huttner of blessed memory, he explains that vidui, confession, it's a concept where a person stands up and he proclaims that those activities which I have performed, which are not the things that Hashem wanted me to do, that I have felt that they are part of me, that they are internalized by me. Either I was born that way, or I schlepped them into my life. Those things are no longer part of me. Those things are not me anymore. So, and the mashal would be, the analogy is, in the same way that the person's physical body has a system which will violently throw out things that the system can't take, if you eat poison, the body naturally wants to expel it and get rid of it. That's the natural way. That's why Hashem gave us such a system to understand. Why? What creates me to vomit? There's something in the system shouldn't be there. So naturally, I want to vomit it out. So we should learn from that, that a Jew should naturally want to vomit out anything that is in his system spiritually that should not belong. So we'll call this a spiritual expulsion of that which is not compatible, in essence, with the person's personality. It's poison in my system. Anger is poison in my system. That meat is so terrible. It destroys my system. It's bringing idol worship into my system, and I got to throw that out of my system. Speaking Lashon Hara is poison to my system. I've got to violently throw it out. where, so vidui is the proclamation that this, what I did, when I said that nasty lashon hara about a person, and at the time I wanted to say it, and I enjoyed saying it, and I felt that that was part of who I am and what I would like to do, but I would now like to say that this system can't hold this anymore. I don't want to identify this anymore. This is not part of my system. This is a form of vomiting out that which is not compatible with the system inside. Okay, just like, you know, Marshall, when you do a transplant on a body, sometimes the body will reject that because it's not naturally its. So you know, we transplanted some Averos into our neshama. And the neshama doesn't like it. But you have to notice that it's not part of you anymore. When you spoke the Lashon Hara, you felt it was something that was good, something that you enjoyed, something that you are having lots of pleasure. You really identify with wanting to bury people alive with your caustic comments. And you have such a pleasure in doing that, and you're poisoning your system. When the person comes to tshuva, he's realizing this is poison in my system. And before, when you were involved in the avera, you felt this was me. This was me. This is what I am. I am a person who can't live without speaking lashon hara. And you have to come to the point where you can take that lashon hara and you can extricate it from who you are. You can pick it, as it were, hold it and look at it. It's not in me anymore. It's over here. And then you throw it out. It's not me anymore. It's like a little louse that's in your hair that you're just taking it and you're taking it out. I don't want it anymore. It can't infest inside of me anymore. Right? That's what's going on over here. So in essence, the personality of the human being is such that it rejects this alien behavior. So vidui is the process where the person proclaims that this is not me, I want to expel it from the system. That's really what vidui is. Just saying words, just reading on Yom Kippur, it's probably the only time I really say vidui. It's interesting. You should be saying vidui every day of the week. Every day of the week you should say vidui. Because we do have Averus every day.
We do, actually. There is ask for forgiveness.
Real vidui.
Not
on that kind of thing. Even the Sephardim would just run through it. You know, sit down at night and say, Hashem, I yelled and screamed at my wife. You know, there's no excuse for that. And although my ego might think that's who and what I am, and that's what makes me feel like a superior spouse, you have to take it and say, this is garbage. This is not who I am. And you have to throw it out. But we don't usually analyze things. We just say, okay, I went through the motions. You've got to really, you know, expel it. You've got to take it and get rid of it. Right? That's what vidui is. It has to happen. That's when you did the avera, it was part of your system. Right? It was something that you, I like it. And you say, that's part of who I am. Vidui is saying, this is not who I am. This is not what I identify with. It's something that's external to me. I know, just a ton of fashana, that's very general.
It's very specific.
No, it isn't.
Well, yes, it asks you exactly to say what you did.
If you say it, you don't, people don't usually say it. They don't spell it out. They don't, usually they don't go beneath the line. You know, I understand. There's a little asterisk there that says, but
that's the only mechanism available.
I know, but people don't say it every day. People don't say it every day. I know. People don't say it every day.
It's very specific, right?
I understand. How many people say it's gray box? How many people say it? I agree, Sam. But how many people say that gray box?
Maybe they're not aware of it.
You told us not to change the words of the Anshei Knesset Zagdala every day.
Yeah, no, that would be saying the same Avera every day. If every day you pick a new Avera you did, that's fine. I mean, it's not fine you did it, but it's fine that you're trying to get rid of it. Right? And the truth is, if you do it every, if you do it, I mean, And it can't just be done in the context of a prayer. I mean, it's got to be done with some thought and
so what's the mechanism?
No, it's there, but you got to sit down and set it up, you know, or you're going to have to spend a lot of time in your Shemone Esrei.
I think psychiatrists wouldn't have a business if it wasn't difficult.
Well, it's okay. The HR wouldn't have a business if it wasn't difficult. But that's what has to happen. It has to really be something you're consciously aware of. This is the specific avera I've done. This is a specific behavior that has to change. I don't want it. I hate it. It's not part of me. That's the critical point. So we ask the question, so that's the mechanism. So why do we have to say vita for what our ancestors did? If your parents did certain averas, so why do you have to confess for that? So the answer is that just like the activities in my own life solidify my attachment to those averos. So and the process of vidui requires a more internal vidui for those averos that have already become part of me, as opposed to those things that happened. So not only do we recognize that, but maybe there are certain averos that weren't your fault necessarily, but there's still a strong part of you. Because they've been there for many generations.
Genetically, not even.
It could be a little bit genetic. I mean, the spiritual genome could be negative. You know, that's why I'm doing a little more research on the names, since we're doing a lot of names in the shul. I'm looking into certain things, and like, for example, it's not so pushit, let's say, to name somebody after a person who you know was a very bad person. If a person had really bad mitos, was a real creep, try to think of like a non-Jew who's like that. We don't want to talk about Jews that way, but you know, you see in the news certain people who are like real creeps, right? Really had a temper and beat their spouses, you know, regularly, you know, and were just vulgar individuals. I'm not talking about people who were good, nice people, but they just weren't aware that Yiddishkeit was an important thing to do. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who were really terrible people.
Meta.
No, I don't want to talk about Jews.
Well,
I talk about non-Jews.
Well, we should be responsible for the non-Jews.
I'm just give an example of somebody bad. Let's pick non-Jews.
Okay.
I'm just saying. But if you name, you know, that's already not a good thing to do. It's not a good thing to do. It's not so pushy what you do.
Jews going to name after a goy. What's that?
But there are Jews who are bad. I just want to give an example of it.
Okay.
But let's say a person, you know, it's not so pushy. Let's say you had a father who was a terrible person. Just by nature was terrible. And then he died, right? And then you have a kid to name your kid after him. It's not so pushy. You'd have to seek good counsel from your rabbi as to what to do in that situation. Because that's part of what one is, right? If there are generations before you that did certain averis, by the time you come around, it's almost taken for granted that at some point in your life you're going to do this. Let's give a racism. Let's say, you know, there was a long tshuva that whites really passed on a tradition that blacks were inferior people. Finished. You know, and it was a whole kind of where you portrayed blacks, and at the dinner table you would just, that would be a common way of talking about them, and the kids just pick it up, and they just, or the fact that you know, Muslims want to kill Jews, right? It's just a fact. It's not to be disputed, and it was in their mother's milk that you hate Jews. So that's something that becomes part of what you are. If you live in a home where, let's say you lived in a home where they didn't give tzedakah. And this is already a minhag of Hussein, Piyadenu. That your great grandfather didn't give tzedakah, and he transplanted that to your grandfather and to your father, three generations of not giving tzedakah. What do you mean, person has to, God helps those who help themselves. Finished. And that became your tradition. So you're going to be there too. There's no question about it. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to be as responsible for what they've done. I'm not going to be responsible for what they've done, but I got to be responsible for what I've done. But when you're talking about the process of vidui, which is, as we said, it's expulsion, it's vomiting. So when you're vomiting it out, that has to include all the dimensions of what was internalized before when you did the averis. Because when you do an avera like that, you represent the internalization of not only what you did in your life, but also what the generations before you were as well. You already represent generations of this type of avera. So in the process of vidui, it's critical to realize that, number one, I am what I did, but I also am where I came from as well. And you've got to reject, to a great degree, your ancestry's beliefs that were not proper beliefs as well. You have to reject that system, because that is part of you if you want to accept it or not. It is part of you. Unless that's something you rejected long ago. But, you know, if this is the way you were and you realize, I wonder why I keep beating my wife. And he says, I know why, because I saw Abba beat Ima all the time. As a matter of fact, I even saw Zadie beat Bubby. Right? And then you realize, you know, and when you start getting, like, you wonder why, you finally come to the conclusion you shouldn't be doing this. So why, you know, how did I come to doing this? And you start realizing, well, number one, I have a temper. Number two, I saw my father doing it all the time. And you thought, well, that was normal. And you have to go up and say, this is not normal. I reject my behavior, my father's behavior, my grandfather's behavior. Or the pursuit of wealth to the exclusion of doing mitzvahs, which is something we've certainly inherited from our parents and grandparents. You know, you have to reject that lifestyle, right? So it has to include, that expulsion has to include all these dimensions. So in the process of tshuva, that's what you got to say. I am what I did, but I'm also where I came from as well. And therefore, in the process of vidui, one has to expel everything from the system. Now, this you find, you know, is parallel in the stories we're learning now in the Torah with the Avos. Avram had a Yishmael. Yitzchak had an Esav. But not until Yaakov were we told that his bed was complete. So let's think about it. Why did Avram end up with such a rotten kid, Yishmael? And why did Yitzchak end up with such a rotten kid, Esav? Where did it come from? So the answer is, as much as Avram worked on his midos in his lifetime, as much as Yitzchak worked on his midos, there was a lot of junk to purify from the system. There were 20 generations of degeneration. Right? That was heavy duty schmutz. That was heavily coded into Avram's psyche. These were givens. They were givens that you are pagan. Givens that you are not kind. Givens that you don't even know what kindness and control in these things are. It was given that, you know, you wanted to marry a woman, you smashed her on the head and dragged her into your cave. And that was what life was all about. It was givens that women and children were not treated like human beings. And all those other rotten qualities that humanity had. Right, and this is what Avram and Yitzchak were born into, such a world.
Avram wasn't like that.
He was born into it. He had to get out of it. He had to clean it all out of the system.
He didn't make confessions. He just was a good person.
Oh, yes. He was always good all his life. Now, what are you talking about?
Wasn't he?
You don't think he bowed down to idols to a certain point of his life, and then he came to the realization it was wrong?
Well, okay. That was the...
So he had to do vidui. You don't think Avram had lots of vidui to do in his life? I think he was born with a spiritual silver spoon in his mouth. It's not the point. The point is he started off bad. Like everybody else. It's not possible to think that Avram didn't have major tests in his life. If he was as great as he was, that means there was a tremendous amount that he had to throw out of his life.
And in Yitzhak case, he had two sons. One was good.
And one was bad. That's what we're trying to say. One was bad.
How did it work?
So first of all, Yitzchak was born later. And second of all, he was born after Avram was circumcised.
Right.
In other words, Avram had more time to clean out the junk of the system. And that's really why, as they say, why the patriarchs were barren and didn't have children right away, so they could spend more of their life cleaning the junk out of the system. All right? So if you ever had kids when he was 25, then there was still a lot of junk in his system. His belief system. Remember, I went through 10 tests. By the time Yitzhak came along, he had gone through at least 6 or 7. That cleaned out a lot of junk from the system before he brought Yitzhak into the world. But there was a lot of junk that was in his system. Not a lot, but there was a certain amount of junk in his system when Yishmael came into the world. Unperfected chesed was in his world. Was in Yishmael's world. So therefore, it comes out. Yeah, and why does it happen with Yitzchak? Well, it happens with Yitzchak. A lot has to do with Rivka and the family she came from. And the fact of the matter is, and this is what the Mefarshim tell us, you know, Hashem made Rivka barren as well. But, you don't see, it's interesting, you don't see anywhere in the Torah it talks about in the early stages, how Avram and Sarah were praying to have children. Doesn't say it. Not in my Chumash. But right away, as soon as, in this end of the Parsha, he's married to Rivka, next Parsha right away, they say they don't have kids, let's start asking for kids. Okay, it was 20 years, but relatively speaking, that wasn't a long time. But Avram and Sarah, you don't see they were davening for kids. Why? Because they knew they shouldn't have kids so fast. And the truth of the matter is, Sarah was kind of saying, okay, we'll start with Hagar. That'll be the first test. You know. Even Sarah may have jumped the gun. You know, she was saying, go marry Hagar. What if he wouldn't have married Hagar? I mean, it's interesting. You know, you could speculate a lot. I mean, what would have happened if she wouldn't have given Hagar to Abram? She wouldn't have had Yitzchak. She had to have Yitzchak.
That
wouldn't have been Yishmael. It just shows that women who don't have children, desperate people do desperate things. Women who don't have children, you do desperate things. You know, you think it's good, just like women will spend $25,000 to get these procedures done, which are putting poisons into your body, doing all kinds of things. They're so desperate to have a kid, they don't care what, at any cost, at any price, even if you don't have the money. You know, you'll do 7, 8, 10 trials, you put yourself $250,000 in debt, and you know, you just desperate people do desperate things. So the Torah may be showing you that as well. But be that as it may, you find it's a long time till Sarah does any activity to try to move it along, and that wasn't even for herself. But on the other hand, Rivka, right away, relatively right away. And that's what the Mefarshim saying, that's why she got an Esav. She got an Esav. It was way too early. She had a child at 23. Sarah had it at 90. If she would have waited another 40, 50 years to clean out more junk from the system, there would have been less to deal with whom she gave birth to. Yeah. But that's all part of the product that you are. Rivka was a product of Haran. That was a terrible place to grow up. As nice as she was, there was too much junk in her genomes. In her spiritual genomes, it would take time to get it out. You know, it's not even the Baal Tshuva today. It takes a long time to get out of your system the fact that you still have a fondness for certain treif nigunim in your life. You know, it takes a long time until it's mamish flushed out. You know, for a Baal Tshuva to not want to pause and hear the scores of the hockey games. You know, it still gives up a little nachas. My old team. You know, oh, Baruch Hashem, get a little nachas, a little smile. Baruch Hashem, they won the game. Ah, get a little good feeling, right? It's still there. The poison's still there, right? So it was with them as well. So the avos, you know, their avodas Hashem was to purify the system as much as possible. And, you know, but still, it would take, you know, it was superhuman effort. It was necessary to get rid of all this. But once we get to Yaakov already, and you have two good generations, Avram, Yitzhak, that already reverse the process, then you wind up and see 12 kids that are relatively good. And they're good. Right? So in other words, Yaakov purified the system of everything that was there before, and then we talk about a situation of his children being tzaddikim. But ultimately, we as children of Yaakov, now here's what's important to realize, we as children of Yaakov have the potential of reaching back to that level as well. Okay, we don't have to deal, Baruch Hashem, with what Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov had to beat out of their system that was so ingrained in them. Right? The others beat out a path of purity. And upon those foundations of purity, the Jewish people were built. So hold on, I'll give you a minute. I just want to finish the idea over here. So if we want to reach back to the foundation of what we are, and we can reach all the way back to Yaakov, and we come from where the 12 tribes come, which represented a pure product that was worked through the patriarchs, right? But nevertheless, a person has to recognize the fact that there are subtle effects of generations upon a person's behavior. And those subtle effects are also included in the consideration of the spiritual expulsion from the system that happens with Vidu when you're doing tshuva. So now the question still has to be asked. Okay, what's your question? Okay, so the question has to be asked. So isn't it disgracing your forefathers? Isn't it a way disgracing? You look at, oh, my fathers did this aver, my grandfathers did this aver. It seems it's not so nice in this process of Vidu.
No.
So how can I pass judgment on my forefathers? It appears to be ugly. But the truth of the matter is there's a certain beauty to this system as well. Why? When a Jew takes into account the actions of the previous generations into his vidui, in other words, what you're saying is it's not just me on the table here. When I'm looking at who and what I am, and part of that is in the vidui process, so I'm not dealing with just what I am in my system, but I'm bringing together and I'm linking myself up with previous generations. Now, there could be some bad in the previous generations, but if I'm already going back, there's a lot of good when I go back too. I go back to the Akedas Yitzchak. I go back to Nasa V'Nishma. And that too is part of who and what you are. It's also an important thing. So if Vidu would only be, I only have to worry about myself, and I don't have to go back to former generations to take them into account, and I don't have to try to make good on the former generations, you know, what would then happen is, I don't have to worry about what I do. Then the person would be psychologically and spiritually isolating himself from the entire Jewish history. But the truth is, we want to link up to our past. And we need our history. And we aren't trying to cut ourselves away from our forefathers. You know, we want to say that there always was a link in that chain. And that we're now going to solidify that link in the chain with this vidui too. Yeah, there might have been some bad parts. But you know what? Who I am is also the amazingly good parts that I come from.
That's part of the vidui.
No, but when I take into account the bad that was in the system in the past, and I get rid of that, you know, but I also, by definition, I'm going to take into account all the good that was in my past.
But do it at another time, not when you do
no,
it.
No, but that's still part of who you are. In other words, to stay connected to the past. Right? Listen, we all make mistakes, but we all have many good attributes as well. Right? So ultimately the fact that I am saying Vidu today is because there were forefathers and parents and grandparents who taught me some kind of value system. Why doing Vidu? Where did that come from? Well, there's a tradition to do Vidu. Parents, grandparents who did Vidu. Right? So if you can stand today and recognize your mistakes, so that's also ultimately because of the connection that I have to parents and forefathers who did that as well. So if I'm ready today to confess my mistakes, that's part of the process of tshuva. So they should be included in that process as well. It's a package deal. And sometimes you're going to wonder, how will I have the strength to do this? how I have the strength to make these changes. Then you go back to your history, and you see I have ancestors who had the strength to change too. You got to take the whole package. The truth is, the whole package overall is okay. You know why? Because we're still here. If the overall package was bad, we wouldn't be here. So there's a lot of good. There's a lot of good. And as bad as a parent may be, there was also a lot of good that a parent had, by and large. And there's a lot of good things that you can learn from them. So that's why we don't want to cut ourselves off from everything. Yes?
So I have two questions.
Sure.
The Torah itself doesn't give too much detail of Ishmael or Esav's bad traits. The Midrashim go more into more and more detail. Well, the Torah is very clear on the 12 children.
That doesn't get into such great.
And about the issue of the, you know, they go up and they kill that whole city, they wipe out the city, and then there's the whole issue.
It doesn't single them all out and say how wonderful they were either.
No.
It's, you know, again, it doesn't matter what the Torah writes. We have to take the Midrash, and all that is part of one package.
So that's your answer to that.
It's part of one. You never learn Torah just from the written word. Okay. So that's totally inaccurate.
I just brought it.
Yeah.
The other question is, there is a story of, and I forget who it was. So he goes, doesn't have children. He says, why don't, the angel comes and says, why don't you want to have children? He says, because I looked in the
prophecy.
Hizkiyahu. I said the prophecy.
Right.
So it's, what about the this issue of Pru and Revu? That this is a mitzvah that all of them had and that one shouldn't...
So what's your question?
The question is, what's this idea of waiting? We can see the story of Hizkiyahu, he was told not to wait to have children. Hashem's, you know, the whole idea...
Hizkiyahu wasn't an issue if he would wait or not.
He could see in his prophecy. Did the others have this... They saw that there is... Yeah, I'm going to have a Yishmo,
No, first of all, they didn't see that. Avram did not have such a prophecy. Who said he had such a prophecy? He didn't have such a prophecy, what was going to come from him down the line. He didn't have it. Hizkiyahu had it. That was his test. But he didn't have such. Avram didn't have such a prophecy.
So maybe one could say that Ishmael was his test, and that it was necessary to have it. Waiting doesn't matter. If I'm going to have a Ishmael if it's a test, going to have it.
But the point I'm trying to make is that how was it possible that Avram could have a Ishmael? How is it possible he could have a Ishmael? Because Avram didn't get rid of all the junk from his system. How could Hizkiyahu have a Menashe? Because he also had ancestors who were idol worshippers. There were Jewish kings before him who were idol worshippers too. And that's where the Menashe comes from. So that can happen. But the Navi said, don't get involved in prophecy. Just do what you have to do.
It's also
right.
The difference is also nobody goes into the details, but obviously Hizkiyahu must have been staying away from his wife and like just making sure that nothing
he didn't get married. What are you talking about?
He didn't get married.
Get married.
Abraham and Sarah were doing what they had to do, but nothing was happening. You know, Yitzchak and Rivka were man and wife, but did they have to storm the heavens with their tears because nothing was happening? I think that's the difference. They were doing what they were supposed to do.
Right, and Hizkiyahu wasn't doing anything. He's not doing a mitzvah. He's not doing a mitzvah. Okay, let's just start. Got a minute? We'll just start the next one. We'll tease you for next week. The next principle, Mem Aleph, is Ha'ikrach Mishosor Hatfila, prayer, which is very interesting. Yispalo Hashem, if the Davent Hashem Vivakesh Rachamim Lechaper Es Kol Avinasav, you have to have mercy. You ask Hashem for mercy. To forgive your averos, shenemar, as it says in Hosea, kechu imachem dvarim v'shuvu al Hashem. Take with yourselves words and return to Hashem. The words are vidui and return. And then it says, after you're doing tshuva, ready at step 15. We hope you've done some tshuva now. It says, imru elav. Speak to Hashem and say, Kol tisa avon v'kach tov v'nishalma porim sfaseinu. You say, Hashem, forgive all our averos, except which is good, and we will render instead of animals, it'll be the words of our lips instead of the animals. Right? Which means, kulim chem tvarim, take with your words, say, inyun avidu, this is the vidui, imre lov kol tisa avon v'kach tov, say, inyun atvilo. It's a concept of prayer. Uperish v'kach tov. And what does it mean to take good? Ma'asa tov shasinu, the good that we have done. There's a lot in these lines over here. But what we see right away at the beginning is what a Baal Tshuva needs: prayer. And even though the person is growing through the tshuva process, nevertheless, there's a necessity for prayer, and the question is why. And that's what we'll talk about next week, Amir Sashem.
We still didn't cover the mechanism of today how to do Vidui properly.